Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, May 5th. Some of you know it as Cinco de Mayo, but we know it as all these great brewers coming to our show from South Africa, Switzerland, and Maine, that far-off region. And thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. I was so taken off by it's Cinco de Mayo, but I wanted to say it's, you know, this world, great world of beer that we have here each and every week on Beer Sessions.
Drinko de Mayo.
All right, Drinko de Mayo. Keep jumping in. We got tweet us at beer_sessions. Maggie should be tweeting live on that. So this is quite a show. You know, we've been friends with Be United, the great importers based in Connecticut, for many years, and they hosted their Nepenthea this past weekend. And Michael Opalinski brought down Garth, who's a South African mead maker from Econo Meadery, and Jerome, our good buddy from BFM. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hi.
All right. Nice. We're working out on the microphones here. You guys who are new to the show. And special guests came down, Creston Sorensen and Joe Watt from Bunker Brewing up in Maine. How are you guys?
We're pretty good. We've been hanging out, brewing a beer with other half. We're doing a beer called Boogie Board Stunts over there at Smith and 9th Street down in Brooklyn underneath the BQE. Those guys are great guys, and we came down for the weekend, and we're brewing a collaboration beer.
All right. And Tony Forder, welcome from Ale Street News.
Great to be back, Jimmy. It's great to have an international panel here. I just got back from Europe myself, so it's great to see great beer everywhere you go in the world today.
So what's new with you, Tony?
Well, we just finished our Belgian tour. We had something slightly different with our cover, the current cover that's out there. It's called an interactive cover. What is craft beer? There's a picture of a pint of beer in these bubbles, and we're asking people to fill these out, take a picture, and email it to us, and we have a contest going on. So it's kind of an exercise to see if millennials can still use pens.
So you're just caught up in that social media.
What's the prize?
The prize is a VIP trip to the Mondial de la Beer Festival in Montreal.
Oh, nice. Hey.
That's worth doing, isn't it, Creston?
Yeah, I would love to go up to Montreal and drink a bunch of beer.
Everybody say hello. This is a great group. So you said hi to Tony, Michael, and George. You guys say hi.
After you. Yeah. How you doing, Jerry? Good to be back on the show.
So George and Michael from Be United.
Hello.
So you guys are up in Oxford, Connecticut, and you guys import a lot of specialty beers. Who are some of the brewers that you brought over for your event this past weekend?
We had a lot of our brewmasters show up, which was great. We had Hans-Peter Drexler from Schneider Weiss, obviously Jerome here from BFM. We had Giovanni from Del Ducato and Leonardo from Beer de Borgo, amongst others.
So it was a great lineup. So Jerome, you were up there at Oxford. What did you think of the Nepenthea this year?
It was very interesting. We had a nice crowd. Everybody was enthusiastic. And Garth brought us lots of bees, so thanks a lot.
Let's cut to him. He's a new guy. You guys came. I was so lucky on Friday night at Jimmy's Number 43. Michael, you guys brought in. We had Leonardo.
Yep. Leonardo from Del Borgo, Giovanni from Del Ducato. Who else was there on Friday? There's one more I'm missing.
Garth from Econo Meadery.
I was not invited, of course.
Jerome, yeah, you won. You should talk into the mic, too. Come on. This is the kind of show we like. It was a wild night.
What are you talking about?
What? You were not invited?
No. You missed it.
Of course. I'm never invited to those fancy dinners.
I have a story about...
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Our buddies Oxbow are releasing a beer, actually, this week. I think tonight.
Today, yeah.
Today, that they brewed with Giovanni from Ducato. I was actually up there for the brew day where they put lobsters. We basically cooked lobsters in the boil kettle and then ate them and then put the shells when we sparged the next batch. So it's called La Aragosta, which means the lobster in Italian. But it's It's a lobster beer.
It's great. It's like a Saison Goza. So they added a lot of Maine sea salt, too, and then 12 pounds of real lobster in there. It tastes very, very wonderful.
Jerome, we're just covering everybody today. Jerome, I remember a couple years ago you were in town, and you felt like you were stuck making your 10% beers, and you said you really wanted to make session beer.
Yes.
But now you're making a Saison, right?
Yeah, indeed, we are making a Saison. It was brewed for the 15th anniversary of the brewery. That's why it's called the square root of 225. For the guys who like math, of course, it's 15. It's a beer that we made the recipe in something like 15 seconds with my brewmaster. I said, put some pale and some Chinook. Then we'll forget it in old Bonchien's barrels. And that's what was the result. I mean, seeing all the Saisons that I can see throughout the country here, and when you have Saison with 14 ABV, aging tequila barrels with chili and pineapple juice, and it's a typical farmer's ale, I can do my farmer's ale too. So that's what I did.
Well, our special guest, another one. So Makana Meadery, Garth Cambry. Dude, a few years ago, I had a cask of your mead that had some chili in it. So I knew about you. But it's really the first time I've had your product in market. So I know you guys from Be United. Why don't you tell us a little backstory on Makana Meadery? I mean, it's the only brewery or meadery you guys are importing from South Africa, right?
Yeah, they're actually the only producer that we're importing from Africa at all. Garth, how long have we been working together now? 10 years or so?
Since, yeah, about 2006, 2005, 6. I think I started chatting to Be United in 2005.
So a small operation in southeastern South Africa, essentially.
Yeah, a little town called Grahamstown, which is pretty much if you go to the middle of nowhere and walk 100 meters, you're there.
So how did you end up there? You know, tell us how you got started.
Well, it's a complicated story. A guy stole my bicycle.
That's pretty simple.
Yes. And because somebody stole my bike, I needed to do something earning some money. And I found a prof, oddly enough, from Georgia, who was working in South Africa on bees. And I asked him if I could cut up bees. And then I became interested in bees. And as soon as I started keeping bees, my parents' gardener stole my beehives. And I asked him, I said, Guru, why did you steal my beehives? He said, no, I stole them to make it critical. And I said, what's it, Kritika? And he gave me a glass of this, and I got completely wrecked because it was incredibly strong. And being 19, I thought, that's fantastic. I want to learn how to make this stuff. So then Guru taught me how to make Kritika, and then I started, when I was studying, I just figured I'd do that as my research. Because, you know, that so often people go to university and they basically finish their degree and never use it again. So I figured I'd make my factory while I did my degree. So I built my factory as part of my thesis.
So tell us what you do. I mean, you have bees and you make stuff that we drink.
Yeah, I make mead. And then I figured I'd try and make it unique by making it quite green and environmentally friendly, because, you know, bees are quite environmentally friendly themselves. And so then we set up a little project making our own fuel, and we got another project making our own electricity. And so we basically are pretty green, not because we wanted to be green, but because it makes financial sense.
Do you have organic bees?
We do. Yep. Our bees are pretty much uncared for.
Now, Garth, I wanted to ask you something, because we have some friends in Portland, Maine that have really good meaderies, and they describe it to me as a South African process where they have a continual fermentation process.
Right. That would be Ben and Nick. Yeah. Yes. Ben Alexander and Nick Higgins.
Yeah. Yeah. The From Maine Meadworks.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Ben and his team, they actually use the same technology that we use. So it's a pretty neat system, because what we're trying to do is, you know, we're working on the assumption that if you look at bees, happy bees make honey. And if you're looking at making alcohol, happy bees and bacteria make happy alcohol. So Kritika has always been a thing that people drink when they really want to have a party on a Friday and Saturday and a Sunday and a Monday and a Tuesday. And because that's Africa style.
Sure.
And so basically happy yeast makes happy alcohol. And if you drink Kritika, you'll find it's a real happy Tuesday drink. And today's a Tuesday. So
It is a great drink.
Yeah. So this is a native drink to South Africa?
It is, yes. And what you'd normally say is, you drink it, you'd clank glasses and you'd say, Natoke. which means cheers in Kosovo.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
This is better than Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, I don't mean to knock
this
it.
Beer Sessions Radio?
This is better than Cinco de Mayo.
Not
So which meat is this? This is the one with a little bit of chili, isn't it?
It's got a bit of chili smoked with some oak trees planted by a guy called Petr Tiff in 1780.
So how do you distinguish between... And Tony, have you had a lot of meads?
Yeah, quite a bit. I'm from England originally, so, mead is kind of an old drink there as well. So it's usually, I found, on the sweet side, but this is quite...
Well, how do you distinguish between a quality mead? I know that there's some mead makers who kind of take, you know, some honey and juice, and you feel like it's kind of a juice-honey beverage. But how is yours so good? Like, what do you do that's different?
We live in a very small country where there's very few people doing anything other than making wine and SAB beer. Now there's a big brewing fraternity that's appeared. But when I was doing this, I was trying to do a sort of yeast bacterial fermentation, and I didn't realize that that was actually going to become fashionable. And it seems to, we just use a mixture of yeast and bacteria and turn honey into mead, and it seems to have just arrived at the right time.
I think a lot of the times when you're using the mixed fermentation, it's actually the product is turning out drier. That's what's going to happen. And then so a lot of meads, it's just like beers. You drink a beer and... All my friends, people, I'm a brewer, I'm hanging out with brewers. One of the major things that people say is that beer is too sweet. It's not dried out. The yeast has not actually finished. And then when you're including bacteria, you're, especially with meads, because you have all of that sugar.
Yes.
That you're trying to ferment.
There's another thing that's very important to mention. When a lot of this mead leaves South Africa, it is actually sweeter.
Right.
And Be United work their wizardry on it. And, by the time it ends up here in these bottles, it's a very different product to what we made. So this is a lot less sweet than it was when it left our side. And I'm actually quite proud when I taste it.
Yeah. Crescent's cool because he keeps... I'm draining my glass of mead, and Crescent is too. So, and Jerome has too. I mean, everybody's... Who is not
it's
draining
delicious.
Their glass of mead?
It's delicious.
There's the rest.
One of my business partners died, but just before he died, he coined a very useful phrase. And I like to sort of remember this phrase because it reminds me of Winston. But he said, "Friends in mead are friends indeed."
You're here. Very good.
So what do you think about this mead, Jerome?
I'm very interested in this kind of process because there is this mixed fermentation. Always, we like the Frenchy way of making mead is hydromel, and it's always something sweet and a bit dry. But they're using some spices, there is also one with coffee beans. It's my favorite among all the meads that you make. Makes it very unique. So... Unique beverages are always interesting, and it's always challenging to know how it's made and how can we learn something about this way of making or transforming or making a recipe to then translate it into future beers or developing our own recipes.
And that's the fantastic thing about this Nepenthe event is it's been such a mixing pot of cultures. I mean, we've had yourself representing one of the European styles. We've had people from all over the world, and it's a fantastic opportunity to blend cultures.
Yeah. It's really kind of like what craft brewers are doing with traditional beers, so just adding different ingredients, taking it different directions, same way you're doing it with the mead.
Yeah, the beer we're brewing with Other Half is a German Kolsch with a Kolsch yeast, but then it's with all these new hops. Basically, all the German hop growers are trying to, or the scientists behind the growers, are breeding these hop strains that are imitating West Coast American hops. And so we have a line on Mandarin Bavaria. So we're brewing this Kolsch called Boogie Board Stunts for the summer. Using a lot of this... It's a traditional style of beer using these new German hops. So it's like... They're from Germany. So you're literally... There's a connect.
Cool, man. We'll talk more about that one. Michael, you want to sum up... what is the market for mead in America, especially in Makana mead? Like, where do you sell it in the city?
In the city, so far, it's available at a few wine shops. I know that Chelsea Wine and Spirits has carried some of our mead bottles before. So is Union Square Wines, as well as Esther Spirits, and a few other smaller boutique wine shops. Because of New York law, meads are not sellable under a beer license. They have to be sold under a wine license. So looking for them on an off-premise place that would only be available in a wine or spirit shop.
Well, I'll tell you, the keg that you sent us, the dry mead from Econometery, will be actually tapping tonight.
Oh, sweet.
Number 43.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's also, there's one other thing I wanted to mention about the Ecolica products from Makana. Garth mentioned earlier that when they leave his facility, they're very sweet. We used to also receive them this way. He would finish the bottling in South Africa. But I'm not sure exactly what happened, but he no longer has a bottling line. So the way that we then got over this hurdle was we started receiving the meads about 6 months ago, or no, maybe it was actually a year now.
That
he fills the meads in used wine barrels from South African wineries. The mead travels then over the Atlantic Ocean in these wine barrels, and then when it arrives at our facility in Connecticut, we do the bottling there. So over this time and voyage, there's still a micro fermentation happening in the barrel, continues to dry out the mead even more, as well as adding this dimension of the wine barrel to the mead itself.
And I must mention there, the thing that's important is there's a sediment in there which gives a lot of aging potential. With give that another three or four years, it's going to become very interesting.
Or is it all from do you pitch anything into the barrel? Is it all natural from what you expect from the barrels?
Depending on the flavor, you know, sometimes we'll put a bit of rooibos tea, and we always leave the lees that were in there from the wine.
Right.
When I go to the wineries, I always say, give me a barrel that's got lots of volatile organics, and they look at me as though been smoking something South African that comes from the Transkei. And yeah,
I could see that with a bottle conditioning slightly sparkling, it would be very elegant.
It's brilliant. Hey, this is a great start to the show. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I got a special, and it's kind of a sad announcement. I'm sorry that, one of the, when I first started Heritage Radio Network, one of the guys, he was a friend and a rival, inspired me to have a show. And in 2009, one of our first hosts, Josh Zersky, who's gone on to become an accomplished national food writer, and very sadly died yesterday. And I just want to raise a glass to him, because Josh was a guy that, for many years, we did bacon tastings at Jimmy's Number 43, and we ended up kind of co-producing a big Metopia event on Governor's Island in 2010. So going way back, but you know, Josh is one of those guys that really rocked the New York City food scene and has gone on to great national prominence, and very sadly, he did die. So, Jack, anything to say about him? Because I know you posted on the website.
Yeah, no, just really sad. I thought he was a real genius, both on the page and on the radio. His show was really great when we had it back in 2009, so very sad.
So, in the spirit of Josh Zersky, let's drink some beer.
Yeah.
So we got guys from Switzerland, Maine, which is a foreign country, and South Africa here joining us on a special day here. So, all right. So, Jerome, you know, it's great to have you back on the show. Had you a few years ago, and you came to the Battle of the Belgians 1 year. At Jimmy's Number 43, Jerome Rabatez just showed up with his Be United guys and had a whole, like, six different of his BFM beers and just kind of, like, cleaned up. It was, like, best Belgian style. And it was a great experience. And I remember talking to Jerome. You were basically like, yeah, I'm making these 10% beers, but I want to make something sessionable. So now you actually have a saison out.
Yes, it's a saison. So the idea of this saison is age. It's a part is aged in an old Montchien's barrel. So there are plenty of microorganisms working during 5-6 months. And then it's blended with the same fresh beer. So it changes a lot in the bottle. If you have it during the first 3-4 months after the bottle conditioning, it's something like not so dry because it's not attenuated. You have some hop bitterness, and then it becomes drier and drier. And also the sparkling effect changes a lot. I like this beer because it's straight, it's precise, and I call it my house beach. Because you can pair it with any food very easily. It's a bit like a...
I love your sense of English, man.
I think that it's kind of a style that...
Josh Zersky would have liked that one.
That's
too.
A new style.
The house bitch beer.
The bitch is actually... It goes back to all the farmhouse saisons at some point were wild. They were put... It was 1600. They were in the farm. They were, you know... In the summer, they would... work the fields, and they needed beer to drink, and that's the beer they were drinking, and it's going wild in barrels. And so it's really, like, a saison, really a traditional saison, would be wild, because it would be resting in barrels for 6 months.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, I know.
He knows.
This is delicious, yeah.
It's a wild house pitch.
This is a saison.
Tony, is this a saison to you? It's like kind of like it's wild barrel aged.
I came in eyes closed. I probably wouldn't have pegged it right. It's right on the border of sort of a lambic and a saison, I would say. But it's got definitely the peppery taste that you'd associate with a saison. But a really nice touch of sourness, not too much.
I think the beautiful fact is that this style derived from an accident. Just because they didn't have refrigeration. It was you're brewing into a barrel.
That's about what I recreated, because 200 years ago they had no refrigeration, as you mentioned, neither like pasteurization processes. And the beer that went badly were then they used to blend them with another fresh beer so that they wouldn't waste it. So that's the result. It's half a bad beer, half a kind of correct beer. And if it's a very bad beer, we ship it to the U.S., as usual, like Beauchamp.
The Yankees.
What about, Joe, you jump in on this one, bro. You got the brewer up at Bunker Brewing.
Yeah, I think that that blending young and old beers is, you know, of course, it's a Belgian thing, but it's also it's a historical practice that we really only see in modern times in Belgian beers. I mean, this is how kind of porter came out to be. You know, when you were mixing an old ale or with some fresh beer, that sort of thing. I think that's it's traditional beer styles in general are fantastic. Sort of introductions to the history of beer and how rich it is, and this is no exception for sure.
I was at a bar the other day and I wanted to mix the Ballast Point Sculpin with the Ballast Point Habanero because the Ballast Point Habanero is way too spicy.
Yeah, man, I can't even drink a glass of that. No, our friend Garth from Makana Meadery in South Africa. What do you think of this beer, the Saison from BFM?
You know, the thing I find fascinating, I mean, my background's I'm a microbiologist, and this business of passing on the cultures, you know, you're keeping that by mixing and bringing it through. You've got a lot of this, there's a lot of bacterial, lactic character that is in here. And I think it must make this very healthy. I mean, in addition to being beer, this
Look
is...
Look at me! It's,
he doesn't even need a microphone.
It's going to be good for you.
I like thinking that certain natural... How do you say a beer is healthy? Because to me, a lot of beer is healthy.
Yes, but I think there probably are some things that are going to be more healthy than others. And it's like if you've got yogurt with live cultures in it, that's going to just be much better for you than yogurt without live cultures. And I think also beer with live cultures is I mean, I think this definitely is going to be good for you.
Michael, you know, you've been in with Be United how many years now?
7. I just had my 7-year anniversary last week, actually.
So you're talking specifically about Jerome and BFM. You know, how does this beer stand against his others?
The Saison?
Yeah.
in my opinion, it's one of his best ones. I think all of us at the company were really thrilled when he sent us the recipe for his 15th anniversary batch. I mean, there, he does a beer usually for every anniversary. A few of them stick on our list, and we keep them. This was one where we told him, you have to brew this again and again.
I know I have to pay you a dinner.
You can pay all our dinners
cover
tonight
the
at Roberta's. Actually, no, we've been waiting for a while. We've got like three brewers in, so this is going to be a high rollers dinner tonight. We're going to get like steak really? For two, and I know Bunker's going to pitch in on that one. So.
Jimmy got my tab.
Jimmy, going back to Saison, it's become such a popular style in the U.S. Is that because it's half bad and half good, or is it really takes a lot of skill to make a good Saison?
Yes, Drew.
Wow.
But Saisons have all different styles, too. Yeah. Like, some are just, light Saisons.
Well, I mean,
non-wild. Non-wild Saisons. I mean, there's non-wild. There's the non-wild, and then there's the straight-up, Y East farmhouse blend
exactly.
That you use. It's not. There's nothing wild in there. It's just a straight-up
Saison. Well, it's not really a true Saison.
Exactly.
Yes,
that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah. Because of the... There's no funk.
No.
I tried not to be too interventionist in the way I do the beer. So after adding the yeast, that's about what we do. And when we have an aging process, it's just our only secret would be time. Yeah. And then we taste them. That's about it. I cannot tell if it's a funky or not. I'm interested in targeting a certain result upon the flavor profile. That's Joe, what I'm looking for.
Joe, what's the next beer? Because I know you're reading the label.
Yeah, I'm actually captivated by this next beer. We're drinking another BFM. This is the Procrastinator 2. It's an Eisbock. Maybe I'll ask Jerome about it. Do you use lager yeast in this?
No. We don't.
Okay. But you do ice it.
Actually, we have a tank outside the brewery. And for the first edition, we stocked a beer. Outside the brewery, and we forgot it during month and month, and when we tried to dump it, it was frozen, and I said, oh, that's something for the States once again.
We love you, man. And then you can charge more too, right? This is like a $50 bottle of beer,
something like that. A part of this beer is a bit oxidized, a part is a bit frozen, and a part is aged in old rum barrels, and I tried to blend them together. I like the way that it's not as balanced as the Saison, Square Root, or as the Bon Chien, but it goes a bit in any direction, and at the end, it becomes something interesting.
Anytime I get a BFM bottle, I don't sell it for less than $50, man.
You're right.
That's right.
That's the way you have to do.
And Garth, come on. Now, this is your first time tasting this beer, isn't it?
Yes, I'm still going to get some.
Oh, yes. I
can hear it being poured there. Lovely color.
Now, Jerome, how did you choose this label? Has very interesting color combination.
So, I hope this broadcast is not for kids. So I got up one morning.
It's red and neon green. Just for those
let's
who
say
don't
it's
know.
More pinky and neon green. Yeah, blast, exactly. So once I was in Chicago, and in the morning, something like at 2 p.m., I got up, and I had pink underwear, and this kind of a green T-shirt, very flashy. And I looked at myself in the mirror and said, oh, no way, I cannot go working. I cannot make any other event, so I would like to procrastinate each event. And then a certain damnation arrived on this beer, because we should have bottled the Procrastinator 3 in January. Today is the Cinco de Mayo.
That's procrastinating. And I'll just say, you're drinking or making beer in your underwear. I fought a lot of the Josh Zersky, rest in peace, Facebook today. Wait, and he'd be the guy eating like the rib in his underwear while he's writing. So, this is again. Cheers to Josh Zersky, our buddy, and he did die, and sadly he rests in peace. But he's probably out there right now eating ribs in his underwear, and you become patriots, man.
Yeah, so.
I believe yesterday was Naked Gardening Day.
Yeah, it was. I saw that.
But when I brought my underwear and my T-shirt to the designer, and I said I would like a label with those colors, I promise that I already cleaned it.
you guys brewers are quite a bunch. I mean, we got Crescent and Joe just coming in tonight, and you guys are live wires. So what is it like for you meeting, hanging out with Jerome. Did you hang out with Jerome yesterday?
Actually, yeah. I had a great afternoon yesterday. I brewed with Other Half, and then me and Joe brewed with Other Half down in Smith and 9th Street in Brooklyn. And then I took the train up and hung out with Jim Abel from Two Brothers at an event up there at Rattle and Hum. So I got to hang out with Jim Abel, Two Brothers. If you guys haven't had the beer, you should drink it. They're great very stuff. Underrated.
Which Two Brothers do you like?
They're one of those breweries. They make solid beer across the board. It's like
Abel Weiss, Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel's my favorite. I haven't had that in years though since it's not up in Maine yet.
Please, and they also had some sours on, which were awesome because
from Two Brothers.
Oh, yeah. And then I went downtown, hung out with Jerome here and Corey from Proletariat, and yeah.
And where are we going tonight? There's something going on tonight. Jerome, you have a party or something?
We have a Meet the Brewer at Beer Street. It's on Graham.
Love that.
We'll have some beers on draft. Nothing original like Bon Chien Grand Cru.
We're going there after the shows. It'll be my first time at Beer Street. Tony, what about you, buddy?
I am going to the Village Voice Food Truck Festival over by the battleship there. Nice. We're interested in doing an article on food trucks and tasting rooms, which... It's a perfect marriage, of course.
It is.
I know that Frankie's 457 on Court Street in Brooklyn here is doing an event with their house brand, which is called Folksbeer. It's a brewery that I helped set up a few years ago when I lived in the city.
Yeah,
with Travis Kaufman.
We have Folksbeer at Jamie's number 43 every week now.
Morning Dew is a great beer. I love it.
And
I just tried
their Hellas. And the Echo Maker.
Yeah, the Echo Maker. Yeah, that's a recipe that I helped write.
Oh, that's
a while
great.
Ago.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Bunker Brewing and the Folks Beer on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Today's music by Mamarazzi. This is Beer Sessions. Coming right back.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. On the Heritage Radio Network. We got a great house in the show tonight. Again, sadly, our buddy Josh Zersky passed away, and we're kind of doing a tribute show to him by drinking a lot of beer, and afterwards we will eat a lot of good food. So cheers to that boy. Tony Forder, you're in Belgium. That's a place that Josh Zersky would like, too. It's like the, you know, Rabelaisian lifestyle or something.
Oh, it is. It's great. You really can't go wrong. I think it was our 15th year of taking a group over there. For the Zythos Festival, we had a slightly different wrinkle this year. We started in Champagne in France, and I was surprised by how much our beer-loving group took to the Champagne. And that was only a day and a half, and then up into Belgium. Visited Saint-Fouillon, forward-looking Belgian brewery. They're making West Coast IPA for Green Flash over there, and they have their own Belgian Coast IPA, which isn't quite as hoppy, but still using quite a bit of hops. Visited the Struss Brewers, the Sturdy Brewers. They're always making great
stuff. That's great. You guys have been going over for 15 years with Ale Street News.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And it's funny, you have another guy from Ale Street News here, Dan Kokoschin.
Yeah, Dan Chaykin.
Dan, come on, just say hello.
New England editor over here.
So Ale Street News is what? How many different... Get in tight. You guys are like, it's one magazine, but you have different regions? Or
yeah, we basically have two versions. We used to have three, but now we have the main edition. We have the New England edition, which covers all the New England states and upstate New York, and Dan does a great job in reporting in that area. How long have you been with us, Dan?
I think 12 years, but I still haven't received my gold watch.
Dan, so...
Gold tankard.
Well, so you go up to Maine often. Have you met the Bunker Brewing guys before?
No. We just celebrated our 22nd anniversary, and my wife said, hey, let's go to Portland to celebrate, which is fine with me. And we hit all the guys up around Allagash and Bissell Brothers, Austin Street, is it, and Foundation.
So, yeah, you went to their... Yeah.
Oh, we actually have an Austin Street beer here.
Cool. So, Joe, who's going to tell us? Tell us about Bunker Brewing from the start. Tell us how you guys got started.
Oh, well,
and
geez.
Where you are.
Creston. Yeah, Creston.
I started pretty much on a one-barrel brew house that we got off of Main Beer Company. Super small, we started. And now we're on a 3.5-barrel brew house. You know, the beer culture in Maine right now is so awesome, and we're all basically working together, you know, promoting Maine. And
yeah, but you guys started up, getting a good response. I remember, was it a year and a half ago, you guys were trying to come down to New York?
Yeah, we actually just started sending beer down to New York. We just sent our second pallet down like a week ago. So we're basically available in Portland, Maine, and in New York City.
So tell us, just like when you got started, the narrative. So, Creston, who did you start it with, and who was making beer?
I started with my partner. I started by myself. I was working the one-barrel brew house basically by myself. It was a one-man operation, and then about a year ago, Joe came on board. He used to work at Main Beer Company. So, you know, we took their equipment, and then we started taking their employees. And then you go from there.
Yeah, I think that we are the definition of a nano brewery. Two-guy team that does everything from coming up with the crazy recipes to brewing it, to selling it, to delivering it, to canning it. You know, it's all going to be...
Beer. Yeah. Sorry, all day.
Maine really is the land of the four-barrel brew house, right? I mean, there's so many places. So.
I mean, that's the magical thing is that when I first moved back to Maine, I was a bread baker. I was going to open a bakery. And then I saw what Dan and Dave were doing at Maine Beer Company. You know, I went into a store and I saw Spring Peeper. And I read the back of the bottle. And it said, brewed in a garage on a 31-gallon brew house. And that's, you know, I did it. Nathan Sanborn from Rising Tide, around the corner from us, he did it. And it was like this entry. It was like an entry point. Like, you can do it. Make a beer. You can do it if you make good beer. And if you don't, you know, you're out.
And were you making beer before that, Creston?
Yeah, I was homebrewing a lot. I actually was homebrewing a lot out in Chicago. Me and my buddy had a little underground homebrewery where we sold not sold beer at different art galleries and parties around Chicago. Sold, not sold.
He's a radical dude, right? Yeah, no one answered that. So that's all right.
You got to make money, Jimmy. You got to make money.
So what are we drinking? It's a growler that says Bunker Brewing.
This is called Eat the Sun Pale Ale. This is a brand new recipe. It just came out last week. It's got a very small amount of rye in it, but we like to keep it very light. Just so essentially base malt and then maybe 3% rye. It showcases the Mandarina Bavaria hops that Creston was talking about earlier. There are three hop varietals that came out of the Hull Hop Research
Don't
Institute.
Don't tell everyone.
But it's great. So what's cool is that we've been trying a lot of beers today, and we got some great beers. Jerome here from BFM, I started pouring your growler, and all of a sudden he like tipped back his other beer and is ready for a next one. So I guess that's part of being an international brewer, right, Jerome? You got to be able to drink it and
talk about it. I like the idea of using rye in those beers because it brings some velvety effect. It changes a bit the density of the beer. And I started being aware about using rye when 4 years ago I made a collab with Terrapin down in Georgia. And they use a lot of rye. And I like this mouth feeling, so we try always to have a character and body in the mouth, and that's the way of doing it, and also it balances a lot with the use of hop that's somewhere too massive for me, but there it's a perfect balance, so it's quenching, elegant, velvety, and bitter.
You think that rye is a new trend in beers in America?
I think that people have been fermenting rye since the beginning of time. It's just that we think it's a new thing, but who knows what they were fermenting 2,000 years ago, really? I mean, rye beers, Rogan beers, that's a traditional German style. So it's
Sati,
kind of just,
yeah
it's just everything. Coming back.
We have we pride ourselves on doing old world styles, and so you really have to look at past the barley grain. I mean, of course, barley is in every beer we make, but you know, for instance, the other half collaboration we just did, we added some oats to it just to give that sort of velvety mouthfeel in a light beer. That why not?
So you guys are kind of beer stars now. You went from Portland, Maine, now you're in New York City. What were you working on in New York? You're at other half. You know, tell us your journey right now.
I think it all goes back to just we were bootlegging some beer down in New York City. Are the cops listening? I don't think so. It's cool. But
we're media. This is an education.
It all started actually with Josh Bernstein, who was here on the last beer sessions that I did. That guy is amazing. He's a beer writer. He's written some books. Everyone should read them. He's really smart. But yeah, Josh hooked us up with all these contacts in the city. We illegally sent down beer, and it got poured in like a day, and they drained kegs. So people are thirsty.
I think the police are coming in right now.
I know. I was in a cop car yesterday morning.
Enough of that.
So
let's get Makana Mead. So, Garth, wrap up, because you're tasting a lot of new products here.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Just this sort of fraternity of beer is fantastic. But I was just suddenly listening to everybody saying these things, and I thought, you know, one of the things, if you take the R of beer, you get B, right?
Oh.
And the origin of all the yeast cultures that you guys are using for fermentation is probably originally from the bees. So I want to see everybody here doing something that has honey, because those bees need every little bit of help they can get. So,
well, on that note,
there's a word, isn't there, for beer and honey fermented together? Sizer. No, that's cider, apple. Sizer, yeah.
Well, it's braggart, which braggart. It's not necessarily the most marketable word, but I think it's a category that we need to definitely explore.
But you know, Garth, you're on the right track about where did the origin of yeast come from, and I know that for Bee United up in OEC, I know there's plantings of different fruits and other products. To encourage the growth of natural yeast, isn't that true, George?
Yes, have. So we actually started a vineyard up at Bee United, and we were, as well as two greenhouses with a lot of different fruit, citrus fruit in them, and we wanted to sort of create the small, like I guess, micro environment around OEC, so that we could actually get some spontaneous fermentation going. Hopefully,
so Garth isn't that far off.
And yeah, and I think they also are starting an apiary, and you know.
But for you in South Africa, if you were going to flip and make beer, would you try to? How would you develop? Would you develop a yeast from your bees or your honey or something?
Look, for me as a microbiologist, the excitement is the yeast. That's why I make alcohol, as I love playing around with yeast and bacteria, and I enjoy isolating new yeast, and that's what I do for a living. So you know,
would it be different yeast that would be if you switched to making beer? Would it be different? You would be concentrating on different yeast.
Definitely. Yeah. But you know, Africa's got a huge tradition of sour beers. All the beers like Nkomboti and Pacheu and all those sort of sour beers. And, you know, to start bringing some of those cultures in now that I think the rest of the world is ready for sour beer, I think there's a lot of potential.
Garth, can you send us some, please? That would be great.
Yeah.
I definitely can, yeah.
The good thing is that now I know that Garth is a microbiologist. He didn't tell us anything before.
It's Dr. Garth, I think, actually. It's the appropriate.
I believe there is also that theory that the so-called ambient yeast that are, you know, wild yeast in the air, that many of these yeasts were actually carried by bees, I believe. There's been some research in Italy done on this. And,
well, if you look at, you know, Saccharomyces specifically, I mean, Saccharomyces means the sugar-loving yeast and cerevisiae that brings you beer. But the thing about that yeast is it loves high sugar environments. And in nature, other than honey, until humans started breeding sweeter plants, there was nothing else that was a high sugar environment. So it follows logically that Saccharomyces had to come from bees. They've been the custodians of what we now use to make ourselves happy for millions of years.
Jobless.
So how about this? So, I mean, for you brewers like Jerome, where do you get your yeast from? Are you buying yeast or someone? I know some brewers like Allagash has a lab that will take a yeast they develop and then kind of make stable and propagate.
Don't talk about the yeast.
So we've been working with the same liquid yeast for something like 15 years now.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, I don't know the name of the yeast because we just lost the name, but we still have the strain, fortunately. As far as Bon Chien and the funky beers are concerned, it's a bit different. I consider each oak barrel as an entity for itself, yeah, because it comes from what kind of grape was inside, what kind of yeast used the winemaker, and what was in the wood itself. And now I started a new program picturing the superficie of each barrel to have a kind of macro vision of each beer, because on the superficie you have a flora, and this flora is divided among lots of microorganisms. And I will try to make a parallel. It's going to be for next broadcast, maybe in 25 years. If you invite me.
When you got those bottles,
yeah,
son.
For example, to make a kind
Let's
of...
Say that again.
I was saying, when you got those bottles, son.
Yeah. To make a kind of parallel between what I see and what I smell and what I feel. I don't know if I will make it, but I think it's interesting to go towards this project.
You know, I want to wrap the show up by, I want all the brewers, everyone's here, but I want the brewers to say your full name and the brewery and what town you're in. So
yeah, I'm Joe Watts from Bunker Brewing Company in Portland, Maine.
All right.
Oh, it's going to be more complicated. I feel sorry for that. I'm Jérôme Robotet, and not as they used to stick me at Nepenthea this weekend, not Jérôme Dupont, the cider maker.
GMI.
Jérôme Robotet from Brasserie BFM, Brasserie de Franche-Montagne in Seignelay, so it's in Switzerland.
Switzerland. Yeah.
Creston Sorensen from Bunker Brewing Company in Portland, Maine.
Garth Cambry from Makana Meadery, Grahamstown, South Africa.
Yeah, this is a great show. Tony, why don't you ask one question of the brewers? I know you got a lot.
One question.
One time.
Okay, so what do you think, more for the main brewers, I guess, will be the style of 2015?
Session has, triples.
Creston has a great session triples. Creston has a great quotation. What did you say? The revolution will be sessionable.
The revolution will be sessionable. We can't beat drink session beers. That's the only way that we're going to revolt. Okay.
All right. And Dan Caucasian, our special guest from Ale Street News in New England. I know you have a question for these guys.
You can't stand up. You can't revolt.
One of my favorite beers is Dinner from Maine Beer Company. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it just seems like the hop revolution is not coming, slowing down at all. But people are saying that session beers are the thing.
So get your hop contracts in now, kids. Yeah.
You can use less hops on a session beer, that's for sure.
That's right.
And then, Michael and George, what are some beers that you guys import that you would say sessioned? I don't want to talk about session IPAs because that's a whole other show and I'm not into them.
Well, you can session Jerome's Abbey de Saint Bon Chien. I mean, yeah, it's like about 9%, 10%, 11%, but that's fine. You can drink a lot of it.
I've had one of those.
Wait, no, Chris, you're off, Chris. So, okay, guys, one last thing. Tell us like two session beers in your portfolio that we should all try.
I do think the Saison from Jerome is sessionable, but other ones, a classic would be Reisdorf Kolsch. That's a really easy session beer. And another good one.
Schlenker La Hellas or Schneider Original.
And also like the Beer Zalmatina that we had from Del Ducato. That's in the session.
Miller High Life.
Yeah, Miller High Life. Yeah, you're off the show. And Jerome, last thing for you. It's good to see you, man. Final words, inspiring all the homebrewers in America. How can they be like you?
Oh, you can just take the recipe of the Bon Chien in the book Sour Beers of America.
And then, okay, Makana Meadery,
Garth. That exists, actually.
Any special words for our American listeners?
I'd just like to see a lot more honey out there in all the beers.
Does everyone have to study microbiology to be a really good, mead maker and brewer?
I think probably not. I think it might be a bad thing. My mead maker is a guy called Carl Beresford, and he's actually a computer programmer, and he's made our mead really good. You know, I developed the technology, and you need somebody with the flair to make the mead come together.
So last, because you've traveled the farthest, again, say your name, but say where you studied and what was your profession, because you're a pretty awesome guy.
My name's Garth Cambray. I'm from a little town called Grahamstown, and about the only thing that Grahamstown's known for is the fact that it has a little university called Rhodes University. And I did my PhD in biotechnology. I'm developing a process for making mead, which is used in Grahamstown in South Africa and at Maine Meadworks in Portland, Maine.
Great, man. It's really been a pleasure meeting you. You came by Friday night. You were here in New York and Connecticut for Nepenthe this weekend. Thanks for coming on the show.
Look,
man.
I would just like to say that I love seeing what you're doing for beer, and I think you're really doing fantastic things to get the culture going. So it's great. Well, I wish we had something like that happening in South Africa.
Well, you know, you can still listen to us each and every week on heritageradionetwork.org. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. What a great show. We got Garth, Jerome, Preston, Joe, Michael, George, Tony, and Dan Cacasian for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and to our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.